Webinar is now live.
Okay, can you, Jonathan, let me know when it's fully actuated, when everybody's joined? Does it take a few minutes or is it instant?
They'll gradually join. We're at 12 attendees presently, 14. So at your discretion, Chair.
Okay, well, I will. I have to read the instructions anyway, so I'll get started with that. I'd like to call to order the Hood River City Planning Commission meeting for Monday, September 21st, 2020. We're meeting via Zoom per the governor's and the mayor's emergency declaration. So I hope everyone can bear with us. We're doing our best to include the public as required in these meetings, but sometimes there are a few hiccups. But keep your fingers crossed, everything will go well tonight. I will start with the script. Is there any director's report, Dustin?
No, Mr. Chair, other than please be prepared for October 5th, you will have a quasi-judicial hearing coming up that has been posted. Next Monday, you will receive materials for that report. That's all we have for now.
Great. Okay, let me read the script. And I know many of you were here last week, so you've heard this, but I'm going to update you on exactly where we are in this. So ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call to order the September 21st, 2020 hearing of the Hood River Planning Commission. My name is Arthur Babbitts, and I will be presiding tonight as chair of the Planning Commission. Let me begin with a description of tonight's process and a few disclosures required by state law. Tonight, we are continuing a public hearing, which we began on August 17th, 2020, and it's on file number 2020-03, a site plan review application by Urban Development and Partners for a site plan review of a multifamily co-housing development, including 25 dwelling units in three buildings, a parking lot, carport, two common buildings, pathway and walkways, street frontage improvements, and associated site improvements. At the August 17th hearing, we heard public testimony. We heard quite a bit of public testimony, and we received a request to hold the written record open for 7 days. Based on the record schedule we set, we received additional written testimony and applicant information between the hearing date and August 25th, 2020. We also received some city staff responses to the additional testimony and information on September 1st, 2020, and we received the written final rebuttal of the applicant on September 8th, 2020. The record is closed for this matter and we will not hear new evidence tonight. Our function in these land use cases is to review the record for each application and then determine whether the application meets or does not meet the applicable approval criteria in determining, in order to determine whether the application meets or does not meet the applicable approval criteria in the Hood River Development Code. It is not our job to be more restrictive or more lenient than these than these approval standards allow, but rather to interpret and apply the approval standards as written. If you have any questions about what are the applicable approval criteria, they are listed and analyzed in the staff report that was issued for this application. Staff can also answer questions you may have about the approval standards. We are required to render an impartial decision on each application. This means that we cannot have a personal financial stake or bias that would prevent us from making an impartial decision. Before we begin the proceedings tonight, I will call for disclosures of bias, ex parte contact, and conflict of interest from each commissioner. Anyone in the audience will have an opportunity to question any of us about these disclosures. Our decision tonight will be final unless appealed to the City Council. To appeal our decision, you have to participate either orally or in writing before the record closes on the item you are interested in. You must raise before us any issues you wish to preserve for subsequent appeal to the City Council or LUBA, the Land Use Board of Board of Appeals. You may also present to us any evidence you might wish the City Council or LUBA to hear. Let me describe the order of events for tonight's agenda. First, we'll have disclosures of bias, ex parte contact, and conflict of interest from each commissioner. Next, we will hear a recap of the staff report from staff of the written report issued for the application and additional information received after the public hearing. Staff will also answer any questions from the planning commissioners about the information in the record. Third, the applicant may present the final rebuttal. No new evidence will be heard. The applicant can answer any questions from the planning commissioners about this application. Finally, we will deliberate and may render a decision tonight. Our decision, however, is not final until it is reduced to writing and officially issued. That is the procedural introduction for tonight's hearing. If anyone has any questions about the process as we go forward, please ask them from the podium, which we're not going to do, but let me say right now, if anyone has a question, there is, if you click on the participants button at the bottom of your screen, you should see the ability to raise your hand in the panel to the right that will pop up. So does anyone have any procedural questions for us at this moment? I am not seeing any hands up. Are you seeing any hands, Dustin?
Yes, there is a, Jason Barker has his hand up out of the audience.
Great. Can you enable his microphone so he can speak?
Hello, thank you. My quick question is, since this is not a public hearing at this point, is in order to preserve anything on appeal, would we need to, like, obviously we're not going to be raising it public, I guess there's no public input at this point. So if we've already raised the issue in our written submissions in conformity with the timeline that was provided, is that enough? I know that's a legal question, but yeah.
Dan's okay. Right here. We have our city attorney here and he will answer your question. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, the record's been open to varying degrees up until just recently, and so that was the opportunity to raise those issues. And I believe the Planning Commission's decision is appealable to the City Council. I think that's where you would be limited to the issues that you raised or anyone else raised. If the issue was raised at all anywhere by any one of the many participants, that would be sufficient to preserve it for an appeal. But tonight, the opportunity to raise new issues is now closed because the record's closed.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason. Jonathan, are there any other hands raised? Any other questions on procedure?
No, it looks like that is it.
Okay, so let me go back to the script. A quorum of the Planning Commission is present. I will now ask all commissioners to disclose any ex parte contacts, conflict of interest, or bias in this matter. So let me go as I see it on the screen. Mark, do you have any disclosures to add to your disclosures you made last week?
I have none.
Last time we met.
I have none.
Thank you. Sue, any disclosures to add?
No, I have none.
Bill?
I have none.
Erica.
I believe I have, would it be ex parte? I went and looked at the site.
Okay, and you should, okay, so you looked at the site. Anything else you need to say about that visit?
No.
Okay. Great, and I'm sorry, Megan. Yeah, Megan, your turn.
Like I asked Dan the last meeting, I would love if he reiterated the definitions of the three.
Great. Dan, you're on.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite understand what the question was. Reiterate what?
She's asked for you to repeat the definitions of conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact.
Okay. Let's start with the easy part. Ex parte contacts are factual information a commissioner might have obtained about the application outside the context of the hearing. So if you're buttonholed at the grocery store and someone bends your ear about perceived facts about the application or even a site visit, you obtain facts that way. Those need to be disclosed and people are given opportunity to rebut the facts you gleaned during those contacts. Conflict of interest means you have a financial stake in the outcome of the matter before you. So either you could be part of the application team or it could be an application for property next to you that might affect your property values one way or the other. That's a financial stake in the outcome. Bias is another word for prejudgment that you're required to make a decision based on the facts in the record and the evidence and the approval criteria. And if you are unable to do that because you have prejudged the application, irrespective of the facts and or criteria, then you are considered to be biased. That said, I think I read the allegation of bias in this case, and it indicated a preference for connectivity, pedestrian connectivity. I'll let you respond to that, but just in general, people bring to these planning commissions, as well as city councils, a certain group of interests or perspectives on different issues. And that's sometimes usually different than prejudging an application. So when you respond to this, if you could kind of focus on those issues, that would be most helpful.
Great, thank you so much. So no conflict of interest. Ex parte, I've had a couple of communications that I thought I shared with Jennifer and Dustin, but I don't believe it's made the online packet. One was the day after the last hearing, or it could have been the night of, I don't know. I received a Facebook message from Kelly Morris saying that it appears that we had already made our minds up, and I immediately contacted Dustin and Dan and asked them what I should do and told her that I could not talk to her about it. And she replied that I was clearly biased and needed to recuse myself. And the second was a Facebook post on her page that I saw that clearly stated that she was against the project. And I didn't read all the comments because it was a lengthy post, but those are the two ex parte. In terms of bias and responding to the comments that were written about, to back up, when I interviewed for Planning Commission, I clearly stated, and I'm sorry if you can hear my cat meowing in the background, I clearly stated that I was interested in Planning Commission for housing and active transportation. And for the past 3 years, it is a learned experience and natural for me as I walk and bike around the city to pay attention to the desire lines. And that goes for many projects. The Planning Commission has heard me talk on end about the Indian Trail connection that needs to happen to the high school. Or Jonathan, who is moderating this, he and I have talked a lot about the Taylor Pine neighborway that just went into, that just got paint. And the church behind me, I just had a conversation because they have private land that has a natural desire line that goes through it. So in relation to this project, 2.5 years ago, there was a Safe Routes to School work plan that I was a part of with the middle school. And we were sitting around the table talking about this super block, and I'm trying to get to the point, this super block of Sherman, May 13th and 17th, and how there was no crossover between the two and how middle schoolers couldn't get to school. And he told me, the principal, Brent, had told me that there was an easement along the north side of their property, but the homeowners on Eugene were not going to be happy about that, and also they would not open the school up because of threat of gun violence during the day. So I would naturally look at other desire lines and looked at the TSP, which I'm a kind of a disciple of, and saw that there was a bike boulevard planned through Katie's Lane in the middle school. And so naturally, when I learned of Adams Creek co-housing, that was a clear way that the plus sign could be created in the middle of that super block. I'm not it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to look at my Twitter and understand that I am a champion of safe routes to school and active transportation. But those informed experiences and my background will not make me impartial to this decision. I will uphold the law, the Oregon law, the Hood River law, the code, the zoning, and the goals that the city of Hood River has set.
Okay, Megan, I take that as a statement that you do not believe that you have prejudged this.
Correct.
Okay. Let me make my disclosure. I have not had any ex parte contact except for an email I received during the last meeting. I received an email or a text, I'm not sure I recall, from AJ Kitt, which I forwarded into the record. So you all had a chance to see that. It was pretty innocuous. He was just asking me a process question. I do not have any conflict of interest, and I have not in any way prejudged this application. So now I open it up for people to question any of us on our disclosures. So Jonathan, we need to look again and see if there are any hands raised for people who wish to question any of the any of the commissioners on their disclosures.
Okay, great. Arthur, we have two. I'm gonna start alphabetically with Dan and then go to Jason.
Okay, if you could let Dan on. Dan.
Good evening and thank you for the time. My name is Dan Bell. I live at 1509 Eugene Street. My question is for Commissioner Ramey. In your disclosure at the last meeting, you would acknowledge that you went to some of the co-housers' potlucks. These are events that are typically organized among the many events they have at the property. I'm wondering if you could disclose more accurately when, how many, and what was the nature of your conclusions from those activities?
It was one. It was the spring of 2017, I believe, and it was at Nashira's home. So this was way before they even had a property. And I went because I was interested in the subject of co-housing. And I went that one time, and that was it.
Anything else, Dan?
No, thank you.
Okay, Jason. Jonathan, could you put Jason's mic live?
Thank you, Commissioner Babbitt. I'm just going to reaffirm what we said before about in writing in part of the planning commission process. I certainly appreciate that, you know, Ms. Ramey may be new to being a commissioner and has learned as she's been going. But I would hope that the commission would value at its utmost impartiality and not, you know, just softly explaining away meetings, key events, key moments in the process that directly affect the decisions being made. So with that, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Dan, do you have anything to state on this subject? I don't see any other hands raised. Is that correct, Jonathan?
That's correct. Those are the only two.
Okay. So Dan, do you have anything to add to this process?
Me, the city attorney?
As opposed to you as a planning commissioner, yes, you as the city attorney. Do you have any?
No, there's several Dans we're speaking.
Sorry.
Okay. So the fundamental requirement is that she be able to render an impartial decision based on the criteria and the evidence that control this application. It sounds like that's what she said, and it's basically up to a commissioner to decide whether they have prejudged or not. So she's taken a position that she has not, and it makes sense based on what she said. So I think it's sufficiently covered. Plus also this matter will, if it's appealed, will go to the city council And so that does have an impact on any perceived procedural errors that, that people think were committed at the Planning Commission level.
Thank you very much, Dan.
I welcome any commissioners questioning me on any,
I'm just about to ask that. Yeah. You're one sentence ahead of me, Megan. Would any commission member like to make a motion to disqualify any other commissioner from hearing this application? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone making a motion on this. So we will now move on. We have staff recap, but before staff recap, Dan, you were going to comment on a few issues. Do you want to do that now or after Jennifer does the staff recap?
Let me see. As I recall, the issues were that came up the last time. What qualifies as evidence or argument? Because we have the applicant's final rebuttal verbal tonight, as I understand it.
Correct?
Okay. Yeah. And the applicant has already submitted final rebuttal in writing, in written form. Right?
Correct.
Okay. So the way this works, just on that issue alone, is final rebuttal is limited to argument only. And let me read, there's a statutory definition of what qualifies as argument versus evidence. Second here. Under the statute, argument means assertions and analysis regarding the satisfaction or violation of legal standards or policy believed relevant by the proponent to a decision. Argument does not include facts. Evidence, which they're not allowed to provide in new evidence in the final rebuttal, means facts, documents, data, or other information offered to demonstrate compliance or noncompliance with the standards. Also, if there's evidence in the record already, they can refer to that. They can't produce new evidence or assert new evidence in final rebuttal. So that's in case people are concerned about what the content of the final rebuttal is, that's what it can include and cannot include. And then the other issue was there was one legal issue that came up in terms of takings. I think the abutting property owner claimed unconstitutional, uncompensated takings. I don't see that as a relevant issue at all because the Planning Commission does not have an application for land use for that other property before it. You can't and you won't impose conditions on the neighboring property. The conditions and decision before you tonight is just this property. I don't see that there can be any grounds for a takings claim by a neighboring property owner. And there was a question about can the Planning Commission require more than by way of parking than the code requires? As a Planning Commission, you are code bound, as we say. You are created by code and your authority is circumscribed by code and you cannot exceed that, which is set out in code for your authority. So the maximum parking requirement is the most that you can require of an applicant.
Thank you for answering those questions. Commissioners, does anyone else have any legal questions for Dan before we hear the staff recap from Jennifer? Okay, I think you'll have a chance again. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, I think I hit this question last time, but Dan, if you could summarize the city's ability to require the pedestrian offsite improvement. Installation of the sidewalk all the way over to 17th.
If it's needed to actually provide access to the site, the city has what's known as to and through policies that if it doesn't have access to the site, the city can require that access be constructed and that would include pedestrian access. Generally speaking, offsite impacts are very difficult to impose by way of conditions of approval, just because they're so far offsite, and the rationale, the justification, the nexus is more difficult to establish. But that's not to say it can't be done.
Okay. You satisfied, Bill, or do you want to follow up?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, great. Let's have Jennifer give the staff recap, and then hopefully Dan will be here for any questions before we start deliberation. So Jennifer, you seem to have disappeared. Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. There you are.
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Okay. So this is a significant application with a lot of public interest, so I thought it might be worth taking the time to recap what you heard August 17th and reiterate or clarify a few points before you dive into deliberation tonight. The subject site is about 2.36 acres in the R3 zone, situated south of Sherman Avenue and east of Eugene and Hazel Streets. And the proposal is to construct a multifamily co-housing development, including 25 dwelling units in three buildings, another dwelling unit in one of the two common buildings. And that dwelling unit is really a guest suite, but also with provision for common cooking and dining facilities in that common house building. The proposal also includes a shared parking lot and carport with 39 parking spaces. It includes pathways and walkways throughout the site, street frontage improvements on Sherman Avenue, on what will be called Adams Creek Place on the west side of the site. And as was just mentioned by Commissioner Irving, some street frontage improvements on Eugene Street with sidewalk, provision of sidewalk to meet the adequate public facility standards, and associated site improvements. Just to remind you, multifamily housing or residential development is a permitted use in the R3 zone. The proposal has not requested the maximum allowed number of units on the property. They have provided or shown on the site plan landscaping in excess of the minimum amount required. And they are proposing, as I just mentioned, upgrades to the existing adjacent street network and pedestrian facilities. Multifamily housing under state law is considered needed housing. It is also identified in the city's housing needs analysis as being deficient in the city of Hood River. When you look at applications for development for needed housing, you may apply clear and objective standards and cannot apply standards or conditions that would deny a project or discourage it from development through unreasonable cost or delay. The applicant does, however, have a responsibility of demonstrating compliance with the applicable standards. The site is traversed by a creek, Adams Creek. There are steep slopes and lots of large native trees on the site. There are three delineated wetlands and two seeps. And as I described on August 17th, that creek is actually also part of the city's public stormwater facility. The applicant is proposing to cluster the development, the buildings and the parking on the west side of the property and mostly in the north side of the property. But predominantly on the west half of the site, west of the stream, to avoid the wetlands, most of the steep slopes, and to preserve mature vegetation on the east side of the stream and along the stream corridor. These plans are preliminary in nature. They will be refined before any construction site permits are issued by the city, and final engineering will need to be reviewed by the engineering department. Of course, final construction drawings will need to be reviewed by the building department. You've heard a lot of testimony on the project, and heard concerns raised about compatibility of the proposal, including anticipated increased traffic in the neighborhood, what potential parking impacts there might be in the neighborhood, and the protection or retention of natural features on the site. Throughout this process, we staff have encouraged the applicant to work with neighbors, and that does not end with any decision tonight. If this decision, if the application is approved, we have recommended to the applicant to continue to work with the neighbors and in while refining the project plans for permitting. Just to recap a few of the things that were talked about at the hearing and brought up in comments subsequent to the hearing. I didn't give a recap at the hearing, and I would have pointed out that there are some small adjustments that staff has recommended be made to the site layout and are explained in the proposed conditions of approval. That include adding one additional accessible parking space in order to comply with building code requirements, providing additional information and detail about retaining walls, some clarification and or adjustments to some minor setback issues, and we were recommending updated stormwater, stormwater plan. The applicant did submit updated stormwater information in that first 7 days following the public hearing. And in the second 7 days following the public hearing, I provided a summary of the issues that were, the significant issues that were raised in additional public testimony. One of those issues that was raised was the compatibility of the scale of the proposed buildings relative to the single family dwellings in the neighborhood west of the site. And as I explained in the staff report, there is no compatibility standard that's applicable for this application. There is a standard for building height, and there are standards relating to building design in terms of providing a variety of detail. You also saw some comments from our fire chief about a suggestion that the three-story building, building one, which is the westernmost building and closer to or closest to a lot of the single family dwellings, the suggestion that the, that building be reduced in height and the height added to buildings two and three, and some of the challenges that that would create for fire access standards. So there's some trade-offs with that suggestion. We covered parking, I think adequately tonight already. There's a 1.5 parking space per dwelling unit required for multifamily dwelling. And there's not any other standard in the code for guest parking or other parking. There were comments related to the preservation of mature native trees. And just to remind you, the standard that you have before you is in the criteria, site plan review criteria for natural features. And that says existing trees and large woody plants shall be left standing except where necessary for building placement, sun exposure, safety, or other valid purpose. Vegetative buffers should be left along major street or highways or to separate adjacent uses. So to the extent that the project, the applicant has, I think, designed the project with the idea of preserving as many of the mature trees as they can, and where the code says, or other valid purpose, there are trees proposed to be removed in order to comply with street frontage improvement requirements under the engineering standards and city's transportation plan. However, again, I will say that these plans are preliminary, and to the extent that the applicant may propose a design exception to those standards to refine and potentially retain additional mature trees, that is possible. Another topic that has been provided in public comment relates to pedestrian connections. There was a comment, I don't recall now whether it was verbally or in writing or both, about the pathway on the northern part of the site that departs from the sidewalk on Sherman and winds through the site. The applicant, at least conceptually, is proposing a design exception from the sidewalk standards to provide that path in lieu of a sidewalk right along Sherman because of the topography there. And just to clarify that if that design exception is approved by the city engineer, it will require also public access easement, and it would be constructed to ADA standards, just like any other sidewalk. There is a condition of approval recommended by staff to construct a pedestrian connection to the south. And you've heard comments from adjacent property owners to the south in the Cady's Lane PUD, suggesting that the staff report is encouraging the creation of a public access easement on that property. And that is not the case. Just to clarify that this, as was mentioned by the city attorney, this decision is applying to the co-housing property. It does not create any public access easements beyond the boundaries of this property. And the idea from the staff perspective is that this is a city block that does not have any mid-block, it's larger than a city block, but it doesn't have any mid-block connections. The Planning Commission has, on several occasions when evaluating development proposals, has required pedestrian connections in order to create a future pedestrian network of connections to and from public streets. The proposal here is to require that the co-housing development, for its part, create a public access path and easement on its property from Eugene Street south to the southwest corner of the property, so that if there is the opportunity in the future, we can then create additional public access connections to the south to get to May Street, public street, and to points of interest along May Street, including Jackson Park, the middle school, and the aquatic center. So to the extent there's any confusion about that, I'm happy to answer additional questions. There is a proposed condition of approval in the staff report related to this. In the table that summarized additional issues that I published on September 1st, there was a suggested alternative that is a little bit more prescriptive. The staff is open to looking at the wording of that condition of approval, and I'm happy to answer questions about that if that comes up in your deliberation. The applicant had also proposed an alternative of deferring that pedestrian connection till some point in the future when they could negotiate with the adjacent property owner. That is not something that staff supports. We're looking at the proposed land use action on this property now and acquiring that access easement at this point in time. Another topic that was brought up several times in testimony was vehicular access. There is existing vehicular access to the site from Sherman Avenue. The site has a single family dwelling on it today that is proposed to be demolished for this proposed development. And our access management standards and the city's transportation plan call for when there is a property that fronts more than one public street, that vehicular access be taken from the lower classification street. Sherman Avenue is classified as a collector street, and the streets on the west side, Eugene, Hazel, and what will be called Adams Creek Place, are all designated as local streets, which is a lower classification. That is why the city staff directed the applicant in the pre-application conference meeting to create vehicular access from those local streets and not from the collector street, Sherman Avenue. So to the extent there's interest in straying from that, that's really the purview of the city engineer and would require a design exception. It's my understanding that's not something that's supported by the city engineer for a number of reasons, which I'm happy to elaborate if you are interested in, but that is the reason why the vehicular access is proposed on the west side, and that there's also a condition of approval to discontinue vehicular access from Sherman, and the applicant is proposing that instead become a pedestrian access. So I think that covers the significant issues that were raised. I'm happy to answer any questions about these or any other issues you have, or to clarify any of the standards or findings or proposed conditions of approval at your convenience. So.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jennifer. I'll now ask if any of the planning commissioners have any questions for Jennifer on her recap, cautioning you that she is under strict requirement not to introduce any evidence at this point. So any questions for Jennifer? Go ahead, Sue.
A couple questions. One is regarding the vehicle access that you just talked about, Jennifer, and I believe the code says that access has to be, like you said, from the lower functional classified street. But does it have to be only one access? Because I think one of the big issues is compatibility in terms of the amount of vehicles going in and out. And it doesn't look like the current plans really allow space right now because it's not designed that way, but I don't know if it could be to have two accesses. I know one of the responses we had talked about like right turn only from Sherman having access for vehicles that way. So I guess my question is, does it have to be one access or is there an opportunity to have more than one?
The way I understand it, it is that the access be taken from the one lower classification street. And part of the reason that this particular location poses some challenges has to do with the proximity to the intersection at 13th and Sherman and the site distance standards. And so it's my understanding that the short answer is no, that the access should come from the one lower classification street.
Thank you, Sue. Anything else?
Yeah, I do have one more question. So R3 is residential, and I guess what I'm wondering about is someone talked about events happening at this site and parking needed for events. So what's allowed in R3 and what are the events and what's included there?
The events that would be allowed would be the same that any one of you would be allowed to have at your home in a residential zone. So if you were to have family over for a party, that type of thing, that's allowed. What I think we'd have to look at further as if there were proposals for events that involved a financial transaction that could be construed as being a commercial activity.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We'd have to take a look at any proposal that came before us.
Okay.
Anything else, Sue?
No, that's good for now. Thank you.
Bill.
Sure. I've got one question back to my question on the sidewalk requirements on the north side of Eugene. I would assume, but we've not necessarily heard, I don't think, engineering's perspective on why they chose that specific location versus other locations, I guess, for pedestrian access and adequate public facilities.
I think that was the applicant's choice, and my understanding is that there is at least one property with an existing sidewalk. I think it became a function of which side of the street was more pragmatic and probably cost less, is my understanding. I think it could be on either side. What the applicant needs to achieve is providing adequate public facilities, in this case, pedestrian facilities, to the site. And there are no sidewalks, as you know, on all the way through on Eugene or on Hazel out to the North-South Street 17th.
So could you go back and relate that to a specific condition in the staff report that we could look at?
Yep. It really came from the engineering department. The adequate public facilities are discussed on pages 19 through 24. And the sidewalk is discussed on page 23. It really came from comments from the engineering department. And then the associated condition of approval. Sorry, I don't have these memorized. 52 for Eugene.
And you're indicating you think it was the applicant's decision versus engineering's decision to locate it on the north side.
They had a lot of conversations at the pre-application conference and leading up to submittal of the applications. I wasn't part of those conversations. I can't say for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else, Bill?
Nope.
Okay, any other commissioners have questions for Jennifer before we move on? Okay, and Erica, I can't see if you're shaking your head, so I'm gonna assume that you're not. So let me continue with the script because we're about to hear from the applicant. Okay, so next on our agenda is the applicant's final rebuttal. And what I will remind everybody is, or remind the applicant that we have already received a rebuttal in writing, and we've had a chance to review that for some time. So we've all read that. and it's now the applicant's chance to deliver that in verbal form. And the applicant knows that no new evidence is to be presented. And Dustin has suggested that it's pretty simple that if you say anything that can't be prefaced by as you see in the report or as you see in the record, then you should be careful about that. So with that, I will ask Jonathan to allow Joran Bass to speak.
Just one moment while he reconnects him, giving him panelist.
And let me remind everybody that what's going on here, the applicant has the obligation to prove compliance. So they therefore they have the right to speak last. So this is the last we'll hear from anybody. We've already closed the record for any evidence. So this is simply a statement of rebuttal, which is argument, which is allowed prior to us fully closing the record and starting deliberation. So Joran Bass, are you live yet?
Yeah, actually. Our architect, Seth Moran, is going to deliver the rebuttal.
I'm sorry, who's delivering the rebuttal?
So I think he raised his hand.
Oh, Seth Moran. Okay. Do you see that, Jonathan?
Yep, he is reconnecting as a panelist as we speak.
Okay, Seth, are you there yet?
All right, I'm with you now. I was on mute.
Great. Appreciate that, Seth. Let me just remind you that, so this is final rebuttal. We've all read all the material. We've heard a lot of testimony and we're eager to get to deliberation. So appreciate if you could give us a brief verbal statement of your rebuttal.
Sounds good. Members of the Planning Commission, thank you. I'm happy to be back before you for a continuation of the hearing and to speak on behalf of the 25 households of Adams Creek Co-Housing. Obviously, when we last met, the record was held open prior to this final rebuttal. As you mentioned, you've read everything that's been submitted to the record. I'll just add that we used the extended record period to further clarify the details of the submitted plans and address concerns voiced by our neighbors. I think one good example, I don't think Jennifer mentioned it, is that we made some improvements to the northern stormwater facility such that it was deemed feasible by the city engineer. And then we also strove to make our intentions clear about the interface between utilities and waterways. And we stated our intent to create a construction management plan that would be open to neighbors' participation. That extended record also allowed city staff to provide some technical clarifications for what is and is not within the scope of this land use procedure. And we'd just like to thank Jennifer for providing specific page references for findings in the staff report. So yes, with respect for everyone's time this evening, rather than reading the written rebuttal, I'm just going to reiterate two items before we proceed with deliberations. So first is regarding offsite improvements. The co-housing community restates their willingness to work with the impacted neighbors, the city engineer, the fire chief, and other city bureaus to discuss the specific implementation of those offsite standards. Our goal is really to find balanced and innovative solutions that are in the best interest of all parties. So examples of calibrations that we'd hope to make include saving many additional mature trees, a strategic alignment of the turn from paved Adams Creek Place onto unimproved Hazel Avenue, and then some exploration of clever alternatives to the sidewalk along Eugene Street. Point of clarification, I do believe that the suggestion for the sidewalk to be aligned on the north side of Eugene Street did come from the city engineer. We had no particular preference in that matter. And some of the things I would hope to calibrate are small, but they're very important details, like the precise location of fire hydrants and streetlights and the like. So those refinements are known as design exceptions. And as we stated, reminded everyone, the city engineer has the exclusive authority to review those design exceptions at the time of construction permits. That said, the applicant has no objection to formalizing the process of meeting with the neighbors and the city engineer through a condition of approval. The second item, we'd like to ask the Planning Commission for your help in navigating the complicated issue of the requested pedestrian connection between Eugene Street and Andy's Way. So Adams Creek Co-Housing, the community, they feel caught between competing interests. Ultimately, they want to do what is best for the greater Hood River community, and they want to do it in a way that places the least burden on private property owners, including their neighbors at Katie's Lane. We do agree with the city goal of increased pedestrian connectivity, and we do understand the staff's perspective that the connection is for future generations. However, we don't feel the benefit to burden ratio of this specific connection is fully justified. And I'll give you our three reasons. First, as stated in the letters from Katie's Lane's HOA, they clearly oppose the easement and they see it as a violation of their property rights. They can and probably will build a fence to block the effective use of that easement. And we respect our neighbors' rights and their decisions. Second, there are other routes, perhaps safer routes, to the front door of the middle school. And this proposed sort of backdoor cut through benefits a few households. And the city has already burdened the co-housing community with installing sidewalks and other costly improvements to overcome the city's lack of pedestrian infrastructure. Last, the applicant has worked diligently to address concerns around stormwater management, tree retention, and landscape buffers. And as recently modified by the staff, city staff, this condition of approval for a 5-foot hardscape conflicts with those objectives in our opinion. So to be clear, the applicant's first choice is as originally submitted with no easement. We arrived at that submitted design after many conversations with neighbors and after listening to their concerns. So if the Planning Commission sides with city staff and requires Adams Creek to provide an easement, we'd like to rebut the implementation of that easement with a suggested adjustment. And that would be to reduce the width and to allow it to be constructed as a well-maintained natural path. So there's a 6-foot setback between the property line and the carport wall. And so a 5-foot concrete walk would not leave adequate space for landscaping to grow to a suitable size. However, we feel that like maybe a 3-foot wide park-like softscape path could meet the objectives of having a landscape buffer and reducing the amount of paved surfaces on the site. That adjustment would be respectful to the property owner to the west, and it would not increase the volume of stormwater detention, and it would not force the removal of additional existing trees. So in closing, members of the commission, we thank you for your thoughtful consideration and your service to our community. Based on submitted plans, narratives, the staff report, and our written rebuttal, the proposed project before you meets and exceeds the criteria for site plan approval of permitted uses in the high density zone. I urge you to make the decision to build a stronger, healthier, and more resilient future for the city of Hood River. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Seth. Now I'll ask planning commissioners, do you have any questions for Seth or Joran concerning their final rebuttal? And let's be really careful about those questions being specifically about the rebuttal. Okay, I'm not seeing any. Let me ask staff, I'm getting ready to fully close the record. Is there anything that I've missed here? Dustin?
Mr. Chair, we are here for your questions, but we have nothing else to introduce. So
great.
During the deliberation, otherwise we will we'll step aside while the commission deliberates.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is, in 1 second, I'm going to close the record fully. I just want to explain that we will leave the hand-raising ability open, and that's specifically if there is a procedural objection. If we're doing something that you believe is illegal and violates procedural rules and you need to preserve that for appeal, you'll be able to raise your hand, and then I will stop deliberation and we will be able to consult with you on that. But otherwise, please don't raise your hand just because you agree or you have some additional information you'd like to add or anything like that. That's not what can happen in deliberation. We can't take any more comments, arguments, evidence, anything like that. So with that, I close the record on this matter and I will open deliberation. So let me ask to start with, does anyone, what issues are on your list that you would like to talk about? So let's, I want to make a list of things we're going to be discussing. So who wants to volunteer with an issue? Sue, go ahead.
The easement.
And you're talking about the pedestrian easement on the, right, on the south side?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Anything else on the list to discuss?
The sidewalk on Eugene.
Sidewalk on Eugene. Okay, anything else? Great. So let's get started. The easement on the south side. Sue, do you want to lead us off on that? What's your thinking there?
Well, I guess I need to understand a little better. What I thought was an easement was just a document that would allow access even at some time in the future. So it's a legal document, but it doesn't have to specify improvements, does it? If it's not going to be used in the short term, can we just say there's an easement that exists, but there's no requirement to have improvements on the easement? I guess that might be a question for Dustin. I don't know. I need to understand easements better. What does that mean?
I see Dan is off, but Dustin's there. So Dustin, go ahead.
Yeah. So you're correct. An easement technically is a legal instrument that provides access to either a utility or a right-of-way. A right-of-way technically is an easement in many ways. In this instance, we're talking about an easement that would allow public access across a portion of Adams Creek that would be dedicated exclusively for pedestrian access. Essentially, we're talking about an easement that would cross private property and allow the public access through this. At the same time, we're also talking about what occurs within that easement. So it's both the easement as instrument for access. There's also a discussion of what improvements need to be installed within that. So it is both.
Okay.
So Dustin, let's say ideas in the city plan that increase connectivity, right? But there's nothing we can do if there's a private street. We can't force them to be part of our connectivity goals in the future, right?
Not under just a land use decision. If you have a private street, are there easements on there that gain access? There's going to be different circumstances. Is there a future easement negotiated? Is there a purchase? Is there an acquisition? Those you can't simply unilaterally state we're coming across here. That is not in the realm of options.
Right.
Sue, did you get your question fully answered? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess the what we should talk about on this, I'm not seeing other questions, but what we should talk about is what do we want to accomplish here? So talking specifically about the easement, this pathway. Let's talk about more broadly than just the easement. Let's talk about the concept of the pathway. Are we in favor of keeping this condition of approval in there? And if so, do we want to modify it? And there have been several different versions that have floated around. So what precisely do we want to accomplish here? Someone want to lead us off on that? Go ahead, Megan.
I'll lead off with just a quick little background on the homework I did on Google Maps before the meeting.
Okay, hold on a second. Megan, it sounds like you're going to be introducing evidence if you're talking about something you did in Google Map.
Well, or Jennifer can answer the question of
Let Jennifer answer from the record.
Okay, sounds good. So the question, I'll guess I'll pose this as a question, is the does Sherman May 17th or 13th meet the current standards for block length and perimeters, which I found interesting reading the TSP today again. Do any of those streets in the block meet the TSP standards?
I haven't done that analysis. I do that analysis when we have a partition proposed. I imagine that no, it does not meet our block length standards. And I think that is, but I that's off the top of my head. And I can look up what the block length standard is in the code, but I haven't done the analysis.
So Arthur, can I not state what the TSP says?
I believe the TSP comprehensive plan, all the code is part of the record. Isn't that correct, Dustin?
Slow to get there.
We hear you.
All right, it's just slow to queue up. The criteria for 16 are not a part of this approval of this decision. So this is not a land division. We did not evaluate it. Therefore, that criteria which show up in Title 16 for block length for R1 and R2 and R3 are not included. We did not put them in our staff report. We did not recite them. So I don't think there's a unilateral inclusion that the TSP is all in because the documents that implement them are in. I wouldn't introduce that.
Okay.
Okay, either way, I'm in favor of the condition of approval.
Great. Bill, Mark, Sue, Erica, I always forget you're there, Erica. What is your general feeling on this? Are you generally in favor of the of this connectivity? And then we can talk about the specifics.
This is Mark. I mean, I'm in favor of a future connectivity. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a valid connection anytime soon. So I'm also interested in the idea of calling it out as an easement, but not requiring the hardscape today. That way we can retain plants. It doesn't become a fence that people jump over and head in places they're not supposed to. I can imagine it being a place that collects dirt and dust and looks unsightly. And so I would suggest just creating the easement and not requiring a hardscape around it.
So you don't want to build a little basketball court there?
I mean, I think in the rebuttal, there's an option that is described here, option two, that seems to be interesting to me.
Remind us, I don't. I
the
read that
construction of a conclusion of approval contingent on the city receiving a reciprocal easement from Katie's Lane. This would ensure that the burden, financial or physical, borne by the applicant is not simply blocked or wasted by a fence and contributing to an unlawful trespassing on neighborhood property. If the city can obtain such an easement by the time the applicant submits or obtains a building permit, we will be happy to provide the requested connection.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who wants to weigh in on that? Sue?
Yeah, I do. And that was kind of speaking to the heart of my previous question. I am all for having an easement so that should the opportunity arise in the future, there can be a throughway there. But I do not want to require any kind of improvements. I mean, Omar said hard surfaces, but I don't think any improvement should be required there. Just simply a legal document stating there's an easement. And maybe make it conditional. I mean, any improvements being conditional on an easement from the Katie's Lane side at some point.
So I think what I heard from staff was that it's difficult for us to require anything that happens in the future as part of this process. That if we're going to exact something from them, we can ask them to do it now, but putting a requirement that they will have to construct something at some indeterminate point in the future is at best questionable as to whether it ever actually happens or is even enforceable. So mm-hmm. I obviously I'm not an attorney, but I've seen just far too many cases where the city says, okay, sure, we'll just require something. You know, you don't have to build the sidewalk unless development happens, because we don't want a sidewalk to nowhere. And then of course we never get any sidewalks anywhere. I like the idea of the easement. I'm in agreement with what everyone said on that. And I'm in agreement with not requiring it to be hard surface, because I just don't think it requires a hard surface connection there. I just wouldn't expect that the hard surface connection might happen. I wouldn't expect that we have the ability to require, let me rephrase that. I wouldn't want to require a hard surface connection contingent upon some future circumstance. I'd be satisfied with it staying soft, staying softscape for, you know, forever. So I guess that's why I weigh in on that.
My challenge to Arthur is, what do people who are accessibility challenged do on softscape?
So we're talking about a flat area, and I'm assuming that this area is going to be barked or soil or something like that. So we're basically talking about just not requiring it to be concrete.
Right, but people in wheelchairs don't have the option of going around 4,500 feet to make their connection because there is a barked path.
Okay. Excellent point. So it seems to me that the goal here is to stub out a connection so that so that if circumstances change in the future, that we know that this side of the connection can meet up with the other side of the connection if circumstances changed at Katie's Lane, I think it's Andy's Way, is the actual connection there. So you're saying that you believe that it should be paved now, or I'm sorry, concrete now, in order to be sure that it is available at some possible time in the future?
Just ADA compliant. It doesn't have to be concrete. It can be, I've seen crushed limestone meet the conditions of ADA, so.
Right. Okay, anyone else want to weigh in on that? I think that's, you know, well taken point. Bill?
I guess so. The counterpoint to this, and I mean, as Dustin, I'm all about connectivity. Dustin has reminded us that there's no land division happening here. And I think as such, I don't know what right we have to exact that particular connection across private property for public use. I mean, I think maybe we should be focusing our efforts on what access the project is going to require to the rest of the community versus community access through this particular parcel. I mean, I don't know if that's within our purview here to do that.
So Bill,
there's no public place to go anywhere on any side of that other than basically Hazel, Sherman, and Eugene. The middle school is not connected. It's across an infinite point. And Katie's Way is private. So I'm kind of wondering why we should be requiring access from one neighbor to another. It's like telling me I have to put in a gate to my neighbor's yard.
So I was just in the last planning commission where I was in Minneapolis. I was in the backyard, and our host was telling me that something that he had to get used to was when they first moved in, the kids were cutting through the blocks, running through the yards, and that's why the neighbors didn't put up fences, because the kids wanted the shortest way to get from their house to the playground, and they would just go through people's backyards. And what I have observed of Hood River in my very short time here is there seems to be a little bit of the opposite mentality of the, back to your point, Bill, the middle school is like a critical hub of connection. And right now, there's only one way to get there from the east, and that is through the 13th and May Street intersection. And parents are consistently saying that that is the reason that their kids can't walk and bike to school. So.
Okay, Megan. Sorry,
yeah, go ahead.
Finish your thought.
I don't see it as a block. What Dustin was saying is we're not doing land division, but this is, we have to look at the entire network when we're making this decision. Cause it's like this whole block is a critical junction between north, south, east, and west.
Okay, Megan, thank you very much. We have a hand up now, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain that we're going to have to halt deliberations for a minute. We're going to put Jason Barker on so that he can speak. And what I'll caution Jason is that at this point, we can only entertain procedural objections. So I'm hoping that that's what you're planning to do. Jonathan, if you can put Jason on. I see he said enough is talking permitted. Jason, do you have a procedural objection?
I do. I'm not convinced that Ms. Ramey's personal observations while on vacation are in the record that you're deliberating from. And so I just ask that the commissioners stick to the record itself.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll take that under advisement. Jonathan, if you could, I see you already turned him off. Thank you. And there are no other hands raised, so let's continue with the discussion. The question is, do we have any connection? Do we have a connection that's stubbed out and fully implemented, or do we leave it as just an easement so that a further right for connection exists? My experience is that if we don't, if we don't get the easement now, we'll never get it. So I am fully in favor of requiring the easement at a minimum. I would not be happy with not requiring an easement. As to whether it gets built now or whether there's a future requirement on building it, we can talk about that more. I'm open to convincing on that, but I think that easement is critical. And I'll point out, we wouldn't really be having this question about connectivity if this easement had been required on the other side on Andy's Way. What happened there, looking at the plat, which is part of the record is that the Andy's Way is a public has a public access easement, which ends about 5 or 10 feet short of this fence. So that seems to me to be a an oversight by a previous planning commission, and I hate for us to make an oversight here that in some future redevelopment, you know, we're talking about stuff that exists for a long time into the future. I'd hate to see a future development to the south not have the option of connecting here because we forgot or we declined to put an easement there. Thoughts on that?
I would agree with that I would really like to see the easement, but I really don't want to require, again, improvements. And I certainly wouldn't want hardscape that just takes someone up to a fence that you know. And I totally agree with Bill as well. I don't think we can require connectivity between two private property spaces. So I think having the easement exist, having the potential there is worthwhile. To your point, Arthur, we don't wanna lose that opportunity right now, but I'm still back where I was originally. Like, I don't think improvements. I honestly think kids are going to be going through there if it exists at all, kind of like they will naturally, and there'll be some kind of little trail, like it or not, that may encourage.
Unless there's a fence.
Yeah, that's true. But I was going to say that.
There may be a fence easily.
Yeah.
Either side can put up a fence.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Sue and I are in favor of an easement, but not in favor of requiring any improvements.
And I'm there too, Arthur.
Okay, you're there, Mark. Others? Bill, Megan, Erica?
Could you restate your kind of commentary on the Katie's Way plat?
What I said is that this would not, there would be something to connect to if when Katie's Way PUD was done, if the access easement, which goes down Andy's Way, had continued to the fence line, but it does not. That's what I said.
But Katie's Way access easement is not a public right of way. It's a private access easement for owners in Katie's Way.
I don't know that as a fact. I understand that the public has, if I'm visiting someone, I can walk through there. If I'm bird watching or whatever, I can walk through there. I don't know. So I'm wrong on that.
Okay. Yep. All right.
This seems like a pretty critical issue, and I've asked staff before to tell us what exactly is going on in Katie's Lane. Can we get Dustin or Jennifer to answer?
Arthur, you made
Let's see. I'm sorry, Bill.
You made a comment that the plat was in the public record or available for the record. Is that accurate?
I thought that it was in the record for this on this matter.
It was submitted by the HOA president.
Okay. That's right. Okay. I knew I saw it someplace. I wouldn't have had access to it otherwise.
Yeah.
The HOA submitted it themselves.
I am looking at it now. It says Katie Lane in Andy's Way is an easement for public utilities and public ingress egress for listed land and future phases within the subdivision.
Okay. So that to me sounds like an access easement.
Yep.
Ingress egress. So I know that I have certainly used it, but when visiting people who lived in there. Great. Did that answer? I'm sorry, I forget who asked that question.
Me.
Oh, you asked and answered. Okay, great.
Yep.
So, good. I'm glad that I wasn't imagining that this was part of the record. So, it was part of the record. The record shows that it is an ingress egress easement, and that it does end, as I recall, it ends like 5 feet or 10 feet short of the fence line, which is if that had been done to the fence line as a potential connection point, then we would be able to require this as the mating part of that connection. So I'd hate to not have an easement and give up the ability to do that in the future when a replatting or a reformatting or redevelopment happens on the other side of the fence. That sounds like the HOA is quite dead set against it, and you know that's their prerogative and their right. It's their property, but I would hate to see us wind up limiting it in the future if a redevelopment happens there or change in ownership happens or people change their minds. So, Bill, I'm sorry, are you there? Or are you disagreeing?
Yep, no, I'm here. I guess with that additional piece of information, I could support an access easement.
Okay. Megan, Erica?
I'm in support of an access easement. This is Erica.
Thank you.
I'm in support Megan? Of the... I'm supportive of the access easement and the improvement, the way the condition of approval was written.
So there were two forms of it. There was the original, which was softscape, and then there was the one which we received in the last 2 weeks, which modified it to require pavement, through concrete, I believe. We lost your audio.
Sorry, more in line with the second modification, but I think that's a little too harsh. I would say ADA compliant.
So yeah, so in other words, you're concerned, you're not set on the width, but you're set on it being hard surface.
I'm set on it being ADA compliant.
Okay. Great. Does anyone, we're sounds like we're in agreement so far on an easement there. And the question is whether we want to require building out of any of that feature. Megan is in favor of requiring it to be an ADA compliant stub up to the fence line. And I hope that using the word stub isn't pejorative in this case, but what do other people have to say about that? Is anyone supportive of what Megan has proposed there?
I'd say not Mark? At this time. I'd say not at this time. I just think it might imply something that doesn't exist, shouldn't exist.
Okay, we don't have the ability to. Yeah, I mean, so not at this time means not, right?
Not.
Have the ability to
right.
say later.
Right. But I think the easement covers us in the future.
Okay.
That's what I'm
great.
Saying.
Thank you. Yeah. Sue, I see you shaking your head. Is that an agreement?
In agreement with?
With what Mark just said?
Just the easement.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Just the easement, no improvements. Yes.
Sorry, I'm not trying to put words in anyone's mouth. I'm just trying to figure out. It's hard on Zoom to figure out what you're thinking. Bill,
Arthur,
Erica?
I would agree with Sue and Mark.
Okay. Bill?
I would agree the same, Sue and Mark. I my concern is that I think the applicant has stated that there's some elevation differences there, and it seems to running a sidewalk into a 3 foot of elevation change doesn't make sense. ADA, you know, we don't know any final grades in the area if we're going to, things ever going to go through. So I probably would agree with those guys.
Okay, I guess I'm a little torn on this. I'm the guy who's always in favor of the sidewalk, even if the sidewalk goes to a dead end that doesn't connect in normal situations. This feels to me like a little bit of a different situation. So this doesn't feel like it's not a normal street with normal traffic on it. So I think I'm okay with, I'm okay with not having it hardscaped or softscaped at this time. So I guess I'm in agreement with whoever stated that first. Mark, I'm agreeing with what Mark stated. Megan, do you have any final attempt to change our minds?
No, I mean, I feel like I'm a little handcuffed in terms of like my mouth. it's hard to talk about
It's hard.
There's no children here to to say what they would do, and so I feel like I have to be their voice. And right. Yeah. So that's all I'll say.
Okay. Thank you. So the other issue that we have on our list to talk about is the sidewalk on Eugene. Bill, you want to bring that up? I see you jumped there. Go ahead.
I was gonna maybe try and find if there's some kind of happy medium. I think we should try and firm up this easement. The applicant's intending to plant some vegetative screen, and I think, you know, there's 6 feet between the garage face and the property line, and they plant the vegetative screen of a bunch of trees straight down the middle of that 6 foot. Our easement is very unlikely that it's ever going to get used if it actually comes through. Okay. And we're going to be demoing, and we're going to be taking out existing vegetation at that point.
So you would like to specify that an ingress egress easement exists over that strip, and that it has to be a certain width to basically make it clear that if they do put something there, they're going to have to move it.
Or if we direct, you know, I don't know if staff or somewhere we should agree upon what that width is. I don't imagine that it's going to be busy enough that we need to have people passing abreast on a sidewalk, but, you know, I don't know what our standard sidewalk widths are, but I think we should probably talk about it. And then I guess if we're going to direct the applicant or their intention to plant vegetative screening, they should probably do that outside of the easement area.
Right. So that was the question of where is the easement versus the, they were pointing out that as it was described in Jennifer's proposal, it left only 1 foot for vegetative screening. So right. You could pretty much assume you could plant some shrubs in that 1 foot, but they're going to grow and grow through the fence and grow over the whatever your easement is.
Right.
So why don't you make a proposal?
Sure. It seems like, and this will, I can't comment, and I'm sure Megan can, on our sidewalk standards, but if we were to propose something like a 30-inch or 42-inch and leave a 2 or 3 foot vegetative strip there, that seems reasonable to me.
What's the total width, Bill? You always have stuff at your fingertips. What's the total width of that space?
I was understanding the garage faces were set back and six feet from the property line, but I'm just doing that from.
So it's basically the 6 feet actually, to work in.
I'm looking at one site plan, and it's an attachment to the original plan, showing the locations, and it's a preliminary landscape plan PRA1.2, and it shows a 6 foot setback from between the parking structure and the west property line.
Okay, so we're talking about 6 feet of space to work in, and that would explain why they commented that if we put a 5 foot path, we'll just have 1 foot for vegetative screen. So I guess this is an area where we have to balance the vegetative screen against the access. Sue, do you want to make a proposal there? We have sort of a wishy-washy proposal from Bill there. So
yeah, I'm not going to do any better than something wishy-washy because I don't know what's. We have to either say what's the minimum required for a useful sidewalk or what's the minimum required for vegetation. And I really don't know what those numbers should be, but just randomly, I would say for the vegetation side, 2 to 3 feet, obviously more than what's there. I don't know. Someone else with more expertise needs to speak to that.
Right.
So,
Erica, do you want to weigh in? Mark?
What's our standard on that we had just agreed on the west side for local sidewalks?
So there's some discussion of 5 foot and 6 foot. I don't recall what was settled on in that. I think 5 foot is what
I think
is
five
what
feet.
Was left in
yeah.
there. I was an advocate for 6 feet. I just remember that.
Why don't we use the same standard?
Yeah, I'm in favor of keeping the easement to 6 feet. And if they want to put some vegetation, they could put some vegetation at the in the future. If someone wants to complain and say, I can't get by, they're going to have to move the vegetation. I think that the access issue there is more important than the screening issue there. That's my opinion.
Yeah, Arthur, I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're in agreement on that also, Megan. Leaving it at 6 feet.
Erica okay. agrees with 6 feet.
Okay, Sue?
I honestly would rather see 4 feet and 2 feet. So 6 feet total, but 2 feet on the vegetation side.
Okay. So basically, I think what you're arguing is because it's kind of an informal, a less formal connection, you think that a 4 foot sidewalk would be adequate to squeeze through there and leave 2 feet for vegetative screen. Get a little bit of both. I could go for that too.
Yeah, that's what I would. I feel like that's a long term. I don't want to have a 12 inch. I'm just picturing on my desk here, 12 inches of vegetation. You can't grow anything that's going to provide any block that's going to survive.
Right. Okay.
When I said 6 feet, I thought 6 feet total. I don't think you would need a 6 feet sidewalk, you know.
So what would you suggest for the sidewalk, Erica?
City sidewalk. I think 4 feet would be appropriate.
So in that case, I would suggest that we do a 4 foot easement. And let
unless
them
include 2 feet. Does the 2 feet for the vegetation, is that required in the easement or is that outside of the easement?
Why would it need to be in the easement? I'm not sure why that would be in the easement. I mean, I suppose we have planter strips on public streets, but that's because it's between the sidewalk and the public street. So why would the planter strip, such as it is, be within the easement?
I don't know.
So I would suggest that if we like Sue's idea in general, that we make it a 4 foot easement and leave a 2 foot planter strip. Bill, can you live with that?
Yeah, that seems reasonable. I was trying to figure out if we had a standard for what some of our planting strips were.
Our 6 feet is not enough to fit a sidewalk in a planting strip. That's not how we would usually do it. But this is this is a different situation.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if I might be advocating for something a little bit more towards the vegetative side. I just don't. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if 2 feet is even wide enough to put anything there that's meaningful. Whether it's
I have to say, every planter strip I ever see always grows out over it. So if you don't start with a 4 foot easement, a 4 foot easement is going to mean you, if you're lucky, you have 3 feet to pass on.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at any street around town, and you're going to see that.
Okay. Seems reasonable. I'm on board. I think that's a better solution than a 6 foot easement.
Okay, Megan, can you live with that?
No, I would rather it be 6 feet. And in fact, if it's ever a multi-use path, it needs to be wider than that for two people in wheelchairs or bikes to pass each other with safe distance.
But we're talking about something that's only, you know, 10 feet long at the max, or if it's that.
Yeah, but it's downhill from one way. So if somebody's coming around that corner fast, it's not good to be like in a narrow bottleneck. I don't understand why we can't tell the applicant to fit in the greenery somewhere else or to move things around when this is maybe more important.
Well, we can, Megan, but we would have to agree that it's more important. And I haven't heard that agreement. I'm just pulling up the plan now. That's what we get to determine. So yes, we could require that there be a 6-foot easement and a 3-foot vegetative strip, and then they would have to adjust their plan accordingly. That could be a condition. I'm sorry.
How come they can't? Isn't the carport or whatever adjacent to this?
Yes.
Bill, how does this fit?
Well, I mean, I've been thrown by a couple of comments. My understanding was that this easement, the carport appears, you know, this is that kind of long carport with a bunch of spaces in it. So
right, and that's to the to the east, right?
That is to the east. So basically, linear carport. The applicant showed us a revised elevation that broke it into and stepped it a little bit. Each one of those contains, each one of those segments is probably 100 feet long. And then from where this easement would be, if it's along the western property line, I'm estimating that the length of that easement is going to be 200 to 240 feet long, maybe, based upon.
Yeah, I was way off on that. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So I'm unless we're trying to say that we're going to wrap it around and go back east and then come into the parking lot. So that's
no. It goes from it follows the fence line with 1419 Eugene, and it's between the covered parking and the fence line.
Yeah.
And it ends at Eugene Street.
Yes. So
it runs from the property line of the HOA north to Eugene Street, where there's a curb cut.
Yep, that is, according to their site plan, 17 parking spaces wide, long. The width of 17 parking spaces. So.
Yep.
Plus a couple extra feet.
Yep, so the question is the trade-off between the access, between screening, and between required parking or requiring them to move the parking. If they move the parking, then they're moving it. The next over is detention pond and the creek.
I have a question. Do we have to specify exactly where the easement is, or do we just say provide a 6-foot easement through the property to connect these two points?
I mean, easement has to be recorded. So we could put a condition, but at some point before the project starts construction, they're going to have to actually record an easement, which has to have a survey. You know, Bill is a lot more expert on this, but
That's accurate.
Yeah, we can make a
condition that an easement gets created, and we could not specify the location of it.
I'm sorry, say that again.
We could, as a condition, specify the connectivity and the width, and then, but at the time that it gets platted, it's going to have to get recorded. It'll be shown on the plat. The applicant and staff and the neighbors and everybody could figure out where they want to put it, as long as they connect these two points.
Because I'm looking at the parking lot that's already paved. Why? I've seen plenty of treatments where the bike path or the walking path will connect into the parking lot, and you walk through and walk to the other side, and they don't have to do any work.
Sounds good.
So you're basically
liability
saying
liability concerns there, safety.
I'm sorry, who's that speaking?
This is Erica. Running public pedestrian access through a private parking lot might have liability safety concerns.
So what Megan's suggesting is that we could leave that for staff to work out, and either to require the 6-foot easement to be on the east side of the parking structure, I'm sorry, on the west side of the parking structure, or to, if staff is okay with running it through the parking structure, to allow it to run through the parking structure. But we could leave the requirement for 6 feet and not simply not be as prescriptive on it.
Right, I'm trying to say how important this easement is without making, like, giving them flexibility to work within their means or figure out a solution that maybe we can't think of right now.
The problem is that we need to be clear if we're requiring this vegetative screening also, right? So the vegetative screening, I believe, is required in another condition. Let's get Jennifer to just tell us what condition that is. Jennifer, are you still there? Can you tell us vegetative screening there? Is that required in one of the conditions?
I'll tell you the code provision to start with, and then I'll try to find the condition.
Go ahead.
There's a code provision in the landscaping provisions, chapter 17.17.040, number 3, landscaping and parking areas shall be planted in combination along the perimeter and in the interior of the lot and shall be designed to guide traffic movement and lessen the visual dominance of the lot. So that is the provision related to the screening requirement for the parking. And then provision related to the pedestrian connection is in 1720. Let me look for the condition of approval. It is final landscaping plan is in condition number 22. And then number 23 talks about that provision that I just cited in the code.
Okay.
Could you recite that provision one more time, Jennifer, the code provision?
For the landscaping?
Yes.
1717-040-040, number 3.
Could you restate what it says?
Landscaping and parking areas shall be planted in combination along the perimeter and in the interior of the lot and shall be designed to guide traffic movement and lessen the visual dominance of the lot. In this case, part of the lot has a carport, but that's the provision.
Yep. I was trying to determine if we were supposed to be screening parking or if we were had some requirements, if the landscape provision was trying to screen structures. Because we're talking about a structure there, so.
Right.
And the code isn't any more specific. Bill, the way that I interpret that is that the neighbor to the west has the expectation, has a reasonable expectation that if the parking is installed there, that the parking is going to have some visual screen on it. And I think that's a reasonable expectation. I'm not comfortable with us removing that visual screen. So that's why I'm jumping it.
Yeah, Arthur, I'm in total agreement because the first time I saw the plan, I wondered why the carport didn't have like a green roof or some sort of permaculture thing going on to hide the structure more. But I don't agree with removing vegetation condition of approval. I just want the 6-foot easement plus the vegetative.
Yeah, I don't see how we get that without forcing a redesign, and I don't think a redesign is going to make it better, in my opinion. It'll make it different, but it's going to squeeze the problem to someplace else.
So I'll go back and make a proposal. So if we could require as a condition that a 4-foot easement gets established between the two connection points and leave that to be finalized between staff and the applicant at time of plat.
Yeah, I'm with that, that there may be a more creative solution here. We'll find out if Erica's right on this being a safety concern or not, but I'm good with that.
I'm good with that too.
I'm good with that too. I mean, I think I agree with Megan in that we got all this hardscape. It'd be a shame not to be able to use that and be able to have some screening. So I see the need for screening.
Okay. So 4 foot.
Yeah,
I'm not changing the screening requirement, but allowing the possible movement of that based on consultation with staff.
Yeah.
Is there an existing condition that we need to be modifying at the time of motion?
Yeah, Jennifer, can you tell us what condition requires, what the condition number is for that easement?
The easement is in number 25.
Okay. And you got that, Bill. You better write that down.
Yeah. Discussed prior to occupancy, just to clarify, there is no final plat here because there is no land division.
Okay. But a building permit would be issued without without an easement existing?
Depends on how you construct the condition of approval. It could be final site plan to be approved prior to building permit or prior to construction site permit. It could be prior to occupancy. Depends on how the condition is constructed.
Okay, Bill, it sounds like you're constructing that condition, so think that through.
Okay.
Great. So let's move on to the second question, which is the sidewalk on Eugene. Bill, that was actually your issue also. You raised that and Sue raised that. What are your concerns on that? I mean, it looked pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, I mean, I there was one piece of testimony from the owner who's on the corner of 17th and Eugene on the north side and indicated that based upon where his existing house was, he was, I don't know if it's a side setback versus a front setback, but it's a different setback than the rest of the properties along the north side of Eugene. And it also seems like if we cross, we're trying to get kids to the middle school, we're creating another crosswalk in a higher traffic zone than we may if we had the sidewalk on the south side of Eugene. So
it's my understanding that the position of the sidewalk was proposed by city engineer, and I think Dustin verified that. Actually, I'm sorry. So he texted me that he verified that. Let's get that on the record as a verification. Jennifer or Dustin, I believe. Yeah, Dustin, go ahead. Tell them what you told me in text.
I think we have two things that show up in the record from city engineering regarding the installation of the sidewalk along Eugene as a local street. It's not only the location, but it's also, as in the record, the presence of overhead utilities, which complicate that matter. So its location is impacted by, on the south, by overheads.
Okay. I'm personally loathe to re-engineer that if the city engineer has proposed it. I'm happy to leave it as a requirement for the city engineer to determine which side to put the sidewalk on. I don't see that we need to, there are conditions of approval needs to specify that.
I would agree. I mean, the reason I kind of even brought it up in the first place is, we're not the city engineering design team. However, it seems like there was some commentary, and maybe this is a spot where, again, the smart people can figure it out. Our condition,
do a better job. Yeah.
Our condition specifically says the north side of Eugene, and and that's the place I think we might want to modify and just remove that.
So how about if we replace that with the position to be determined by the city engineer?
That is what I was going to propose.
Okay. How's everybody on that?
Thumbs up.
We'll get a full sidewalk. City engineer is concerned with the city's best interest and determines where the safest place is for kids to walk and cross, especially if we're talking about the possibility of an engineering exception to re-engineer that corner there.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. And I was just going to say that in looking at, it looks like there's one existing sidewalk on that stretch on the north side,
which would be a little bit of help to lower the cost. But I assume that the engineer is taking that into account too.
Yeah, sounds reasonable. Okay, so it sounds like we're in agreement on that. Do we have any other issues we want to talk about? I guess I'll just sort of venture the comment that I don't think there's a lot of room for wiggle on any of this. I think we pretty much have spent an hour plus so far talking about the very minor points which we have some discretion on. I don't think we have discretion on very much of anything else. It's zoned R3. They're not developing at the scale that R3 allows. If people feel that it's out of character for the neighborhood, that means they are objecting to the zoning, not to this proposal, because this proposal doesn't really take advantage of the zoning to a very great extent. And unfortunately, you don't get to challenge zoning at this stage in a development proposal. But that's an issue to take up with City Council, but unfortunately it's not gonna, you taking it up at this point isn't going to accomplish anything. It's too late. So that's my overall appraisal, but we're open to discuss any other issues.
Yeah, I'll go next, Arthur. I mean, I think I agree with you. It's a needed project on a piece of land that is zoned for projects like this. The state of Oregon supports projects like this. I think it meets the approval criteria. I will say that looking through the comments and talking about scale, which we're not in the approval criteria, I'm concerned with an R1 neighborhood butting up against an R3 neighborhood. And I guess I would say to the project team, the Adams Creek project team, that they're setting a precedent here, building a three-story building next to single family homes, where all of these types of projects in the future are going to be, highly charged, and they're, changing the level of public input into this type of process in the future. It's going to make it more difficult to get conditions of approval for those types of projects that require it based on what's happening here. So I would say that, there's really not much that we can do about this project, but it's going to, I would say, negatively affect the way that people look at multifamily housing in Hood River and even co-housing, right? So co-housing is a fairly new thing. We don't have that many housing projects in Oregon. And certainly this is the first one in Hood River. And so I think this team is, taking it to where they can take it, but our community is going to have to live with some of the ramifications of this.
Thank you very much, Mark. Anyone else want to weigh in on this? I'm not seeing any movement, so I'm going to assume that that means that someone's ready to make a motion. I'm looking at you, Bill.
Okay, trying to find my unmute button and find.
Yeah, you're right in the middle of my screen. And by the way, a minute ago, the green screen resulted in your head just bobbing in the Columbia River. That was really quite a nice effect.
Perfect. I need to just get back to the file number. So I will make a motion that we approve file number 2020-02 for site plan.
03.
Okay.
Is it, well, my script says 03. Did I, let me pull up the
I think it's 02.
It's 02.
Trust me, so my script 02. Is wrong then.
Okay.
Okay, well,
03.
Take your word for it. Sorry.
Oh. I'm looking at the staff report and it says 2020-02.
Perfect. Okay, my script is wrong. Forget about that.
I'm sorry. It's 03.
Got it.
If there's a typo on the staff report, I apologize.
Okay. Make a motion that we approve file number 2020-03, site plan review permit. and we need to kind of make the following modifications to the staff report. Item number one is correct the file number to 2020-03. And then we were going to make modifications to two conditions. I'll take the easy one, which is condition number 52. And that is for the sidewalk on the north side of Eugene. And I think we are going to remove the specified location of that sidewalk and say that the sidewalk shall be placed at a location designated by the city engineer. And then
Next condition,
which was the pedestrian connection, that was number 25. And we established that we wanted a 4-foot wide access easement, a public access easement that connected to the north end of Andy's Way to the, and we haven't really talked about this, but I will say the east end of Eugene, where it terminates the property line. And that's
okay. Just to be clear, I don't think you can use the, I'm not sure if Andy's Way is the proper thing to call it, since I don't think Andy's Way comes up to the fence line, but
I'll say the southwest corner of the property within 8 feet of the property corner on the south side.
Got it. Okay. So that is a motion. Would someone like to second that motion?
I second it, Mark.
Okay, so I'm going to give that. Sue shook her head first. Mark actually spoke. I'm going to give it to Sue for shaking her head. So Sue seconds. So we have a motion and a second to approve 2020-03 with three changes: with correcting the file number, with leaving it to the city engineer to determine which side of the street the sidewalk is to go on Eugene, and with modifying the condition concerning condition 25 on the easement to require a 4-foot access easement to connect through to the, I would get myself in, so southwest corner within 8 feet of the corner to connect from there to the corner of Eugene, to the Eugene access. Did I get that right, Bill?
Correct.
Okay, so that's the motion and the second, so we have discussion on that now. So any further discussion? Does anyone want to make a proposal to amend it, or are we ready to vote?
Can I ask for clarification on condition number 25, the wording?
Yes.
What was the reference to within 8 feet of the southwest corner? Can you repeat that?
So we didn't have a name for what the connection was. It's not Andy's Way, because Andy's Way ends short of that fence line.
Right, I understand that.
We're just looking for a thing to call it. Can you propose something better?
The southwest corner is, I understand that. I wasn't sure what the reference was to the 8 feet.
He was just saying that it doesn't have to be exactly, if it's in the southwest corner, then it's going to get in the way of the vegetation if they put 2 feet of vegetation in there.
Okay.
So he's leaving some room.
Within 8 feet of the southwest corner. But
yes,
to
he's leaving some room to make the connection so that it could physically butt up there without, we don't know exactly what's butting with.
Right, and butting up to the southern property line.
Yes.
Okay.
So is that what you said, Bill?
Yes. And the other clarification that we should make, I guess Jennifer asked, is when clarifying how that connection, or when that connection gets recorded, because we're not platting it. And it seems like it would make sense that we establish that with at the time the building permit's approved. I think if it's not done at that time and is tried to be figured out later, it may go the wayside. So I would say.
So you broke up a little bit, but let me just say, I think you said that this condition, the easement needs to be recorded prior to approval of the building permit.
Yes.
Prior to issuance of a building permit, I should say. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that was, I think it was a little more than a clarification. So let me consider that a motion to amend. So I'd like a second on that motion to amend. You can get it this time, Mark. Oh, you were muted this time. So now
I'll second it. I'm unmuted. I'm sorry.
You beat him again. Okay. So we have a motion by Bill and a second by Sue to require that this easement be recorded with the county prior to issuance of a building permit. So let's discuss that amendment. Any objections to that amendment, or is that a consensus to amend the original motion?
I'm not objecting. I'm just raising a, trying to be really careful here on I don't want to see this happen.
So you're on the wrong one. This is a question on the when. So let's agree that easement has to be recorded prior. Okay. So let me take a vote on that. Those in favor of requiring the easement to be recorded prior to the issuance of a building permit, raise your thumbs. And Erica, you can say aye. I'm not seeing Bill's thumb. Bill?
Yes, I mean the motion.
Okay.
Aye.
Aye. And I hear an aye from Erica, and Chair votes aye. So we have unanimous agreement on the when. Now let's get back to the where. Your concern, Megan, that the language be such that there might be a problem with it butting up. I think what we're trying to do here is we're trying to give enough specificity to this so Jennifer can put it in proper planning words. And I think, you know, we have to clarify what we mean sufficiently so that when she puts it in planning words, I can sign it and say, yep, that's what happened during the meeting. So you explain what you're concerned about, and let's make sure that we're all in agreement on it. And then Jennifer can come up with the exact words.
I'm concerned that we're doing this in the absence of a planning engineer that would draw the entire route and say exactly where that easement is supposed to end up with on that lot.
Okay, so there were two separate issues. One is, what does it connect to? I thought that the concepts of the endpoints were pretty clear, and it's just our words were a little bit mushy on the south endpoint. And I think, you know, basically our concept is we want it to be available as a stubbed out easement for future connectivity, presuming that the other side of the fence is willing. So I think that's adequate for Jennifer to put it in words. Unless she screams out that she doesn't understand that. But I thought that's what Bill proposed.
Yeah, I defer to her. I just, I've seen it happen where two paths come in at different spots on the lot lines and they don't meet up.
Yeah, I think we have to let Jennifer propose words to make sure that they don't, that it's as close to meeting up with something that doesn't exist as it can be. I mean, it seems a little funny that we're discussing something that's, you know, for stubbing out to something that doesn't exist, and the owners say they don't want to exist, but that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
Any other comments on this before we vote on the overall motion, which has now been amended? Okay, seeing none, I will ask for thumbs up or thumbs down on the motion to, this is the overall amended motion on 2020-03, which included four conditions, four changes, including the correction of the file number, the easement on the south side, the sidewalk on Eugene, and the timing of recording of the easement. So with all of those conditions, with everything else that's in the staff report, let me know those in favor of the motion as Bill made it.
This is Mark, aye.
Okay, and Erica? Erica, are you there? Are you voting yes or no?
Aye. Yep, I was getting to my mute button. Aye.
Oh, great, okay. Great, and Chair votes aye. So it looks to me like we have unanimous agreement on the motion as amended. I think that that ends our deliberation. And let me just go to my script to make sure that we know where we are on this now. So my script ends at the word motion. So I've got nothing beyond that. So I will ad lib. So I appreciate everybody's patience with a very long process. I understand the emotions on this. I also hope that people understand the limitations of our flexibility and our ability. I was moved by people on both sides. I have friends on both sides. I get it. I understand why people are passionate about this. But at the end of the day, I don't think that this is even close to something that we could reject or we could demand major changes on. And I hope that the folks who are not happy with this figure out a way to work with the property owners and the developers to get the best possible result for the community. And I'll just offer an editorial comment. I've watched a lot of things go on where when people become dead set trying to fight something, that prevents you from coming up with better solutions. At the end of the day, it looks to me like there's nothing that's going to prevent the property owners and developers from moving forward with this. I sure hope that people can figure out how to work with them to improve it in any way possible. But that's my editorial on that. And with that, is there anything else for the good of the order? In that case, we are adjourned. Everyone, enjoy your evening. Thank you very much.